This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
7:50 in the morning, you're listening to The Morning Run with Shazana and Xiaoning. In response to pandemic pressures, in April 2020, Bursa Malaysia introduced a number of relief measures and fundraising flexibilities to help businesses stay afloat. One such measure was the easing of the threshold for the issuances of new securities. The relaxation allows a listed company to increase new issues of securities up to 20% from 10% previously, so thus making it easier for businesses to raise cash.
Many companies took advantage of this, with the Edge reporting that 175 companies, or 19% of the 923 companies listed on Bursa Malaysia's main market and ACE market, have successfully raised a total of 8.1 billion from these private placements this year, last year. Now, in addition to this flexible fundraising, financially distressed public listed companies, or PLCs, were also given a temporary reprieve from being classified as a practice note 17, or PN17, and Guidance Note 3, or GN3, listed issuer. But Bursa Malaysia has said that these automatic reprieves would expire at the end of last year. So what are the implications of these relief measures coming to an end?
So on the line with us is business commentator Pankaj C. Kumar to help us answer this question. Pankaj, good morning and happy Monday. Now, a record number of companies raised funds via private placements in the fourth quarter of 2021 as companies rushed to take advantage of a relaxed ruling, which allows them to place out a higher percentage of shares before the window closes on December 31st. From a minority shareholder perspective, what are the potential issues about this situation?
Thank you, Shazana and Xiaoning, for having me on the show, and a very good morning to all listeners. I think on the issue of these private placements, yes, the window was actually closed last year, but Bursa Malaysia has actually extended it to end of this year instead. So for this placement, as far as the minority shareholders are concerned, it's usually about dilution, as if the gross proceeds that are raised from the issuance, it has to be earnings accretive. If it's not, the share price will basically adjust for the new placements. The second issue is, of course, in relation to who are these placees in the first place. Yeah, we have seen companies taking advantage of this relaxed rule to not only do private placements, but even to raise new capital via, you know, other means, including huge employee share option schemes, as well as share issuance schemes. Yeah, to raise funds. And some of these companies don't even have that many employees in the first place, yeah, to actually issue these shares.
Pankaj, what about pricing? Is there any rules with regards to at what price these placements can be made?
Placements are normally done on a certain fixed price, which is normally at about not more than 10%, you know, from the weighted volume weighted average price on a certain price fixing date. Yeah, so in that basis, price doesn't really go very far from what the market price is.
And how do these placements differ from a rights issue, which shares a similar purpose of raising funds for a company?
Well, intention is about the same in terms of raising funds. But in a rights issue, which most investors actually dislike due to the cash call nature of a rights issue, the intention is, of course, in a rights issue, is to enable a company to raise enough funds and at a price that is attractive enough to enable existing shareholders to maintain their respective equity ownership in terms of percentage holdings without dilution. So the difference between placement and rights issue is about dilution. Of course, the carrot here, as far as the issue price of the rights shares is concerned, normally it's done at a deep discount, yeah, not unlike placement shares, which is, as I mentioned earlier, which is at about 10% discount. So in that basis, of course, rights issue is more attractive to shareholders to subscribe. But the issue here is that shareholders tend to dislike rights issues.
Now, related to the relaxation of rules that Bursa allowed as pandemic relief measures, was the criteria before a company is classified as a PN17 company. Pankaj, help us understand what such a criteria means and the consequences of it.
Yeah, Xiaoning, I think first of all, you've got to understand what PN17 is all about. And if you look at the listing requirements, you can see that actually there are about six different conditions that a company can end up having classified as a PN17 company. Among them, of course, if your shareholders' equity is 25% or less, or in fact, less than 40 million ringgit, all receivers or managers have been appointed, or winding up of a listed issuer subsidiary, which accounts for 50% of assets, has been appointed, you know, or has been done, or auditors have expressed adverse condition or disclaimer opinion, or the auditors have highlighted a material uncertainty, or if there is a default in payment by a listed issuer, you know, so there are certain conditions that trigger PN17. So due to the COVID-19, Bursa, as part of its relief measure, allowed listed companies that have triggered PN17 criteria from complying with the obligation under the listing requirement. But I must also clarify that only three conditions do not trigger PN17 under the relief measures, which is the shareholders' equity is 25% or less. The auditors have highlighted a material uncertainty and there's a default in payment. That one, you get a relief. But if the auditors have expressed disclaimer opinion, there's a winding up petition, or there's a receiver and manager appointed, then the PN17 condition does not kick in. Yeah? The relief measure doesn't kick in. Yeah. So what happens here, after the 18-month window, a corporate ought to reassess its condition, whether it continues to trigger a PN17 criteria or otherwise.
So what exactly is required from a company to exit from the PN17 classification?
Yeah, I think most investors actually know what happens when a company is in PN17. Of course, you need to regularize your financial condition. Yeah, and depending whether the regulation plan will involve a significant change in business direction or otherwise, and of course, you need to implement within a time frame. And that time frame, if I'm not mistaken, I think it's about 12 months. You are given a time frame to actually do so. If you don't, of course, there are certain conditions thereafter where you can be suspended. And of course, sooner or later, you'll be delisted.
And Pankaj, what we do know is Air Asia is now classified as a PN17 company, given 12 months to regularize its accounts, as you say, starting January 7. I'm just curious, what options does it have? And does this actually impact its operations? Since isn't this a balance sheet issue versus a cash flow one?
Yeah, you're right, Shani. It's a balance sheet issue and not necessarily a cash flow one. In fact, I think if you look back over the past year, AirAsia have raised some 1.3 billion via placements as well as rights issue. They have also got, I think, 500 million from Dana Jamin. They've also got a loan from SK Group of Korea, 100 million US dollars. So all in, they have actually raised about 2.2 billion in cash flow. And if you look at their 9 months results ended September, of course, the December one is not out yet. They had some 400 million cash then. So all in, they have about 2.6 billion ringgit to tide them over. So if you ask me operationally, the PN17 status obviously does not really impact the company in that sense as far as running the business is concerned. But having said that, they need to regularize because their balance sheet has a deficit of shareholders' funds of about 3.1 billion. And they need to turn the deficit into a surplus. And of course, to do that, they need to, do some form of reversal of this balance sheet deficit position. And of course, I think they have actually also talked about it, that they are looking at potential waiver of aircraft leases or some impairments to be reversed, which could actually enhance the shareholders' equity. And of course, I think if you look at it, AirAsia itself has been quite involved in the digital space. And they actually talking about monetizing it. Yeah. So if some of these can be monetized, then they could actually reverse the deficit in the shareholders' funds to a surplus. But last but not least, I think, but it may not be an option for AirAsia at the moment. Most companies under PN17 will actually go through a capital reconstruction exercise, where a company perhaps goes through a capital reduction and a subsequent consolidation of shares, and followed by another rights issue. But I don't think that is the route that AirAsia will be taking because they've already raised almost 1 billion ringgit from a recent rights issue.
Pankaj, thanks very much for speaking to us this morning. That was Pankaj C. Kumar, business commentator, helping us understand what's going on with AirAsia in terms of their PN17 classification, as well as the broader landscape for relief measures that are expiring under Bursa Malaysia.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.